Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Miss America, and all the champions in BC. It is Saturday, the 16th day of November, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And why am I not hearing any? Oh, it's because this is turned down. Okay, and at 6 minutes after the hour, we may or may not be bringing you news, views, things to choose, something to lose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Okay. the patches hadn't been out. Today was Patch Tuesday, or this week was Patch Tuesday, and the patches hadn't been out for 24 hours, and we were already seeing a lot of activity. Here's where we stand with the initial wave of problems so far. Many early patchers found that the malicious software removal tool, or MSRT, kept installing itself over and over again. There were hundreds of reports online of people who found that the MSRT installer threw an error and wouldn't install, or installed but then reinstalled on reboot, showed up multiple times in the installed updates list, didn't show up in the installed updates list in spite of it being, in fact, running, and several variations on those themes. Ends up, here's a shock, I hope you're sitting down, it was all Microsoft's fault. By last night, that's Friday night, MSRT was behaving itself. Microsoft Office security updates also caused, and here's another one, Microsoft Office security updates cause access to fail to access databases. They get the error 3340, which is query is corrupted. Tell me if any of this sounds familiar. This month's patches include one for Internet Explorer security hole, dubbed an exploited vulnerability, just like the August exploited IE zero-day Keystone Cops episode. This appears to be a genuine flaw in Internet Explorer. And just like the August zero-day, Microsoft isn't telling us very much, stop using Internet Explorer. Don't do it. Well, of course, you can't help. It's baked into Windows and it and a lot of programs use it in the background. So basically, since Microsoft isn't saying anything about it and hasn't fixed it in months, what's the word I'm looking for? Screwed. Microsoft has officially announced it is giving up on its practice of releasing at least two cumulative updates per month through the end of the year. That means we won't have a second cumulative update in November or in December. As widely advertised, this month's cumulative update for Windows 10 version 18.03 is destined to be its last, unless we have some sort of major security problem and Microsoft changes things again. If you're running Windows 10 version 18.03, there's no need to panic. In the normal course of events, you won't get another security patch until next month anyway, and so you've got a month to update from 18.03 to 19.03 or 19.02, whatever it is, 4. At any rate, let's face it, the entire Microsoft patch system is utterly, horribly, terribly, impossibly screwed up. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is I have to fix this because I put them in this order, and then for some stupid reason when I print them out on the screen, mm-hmm, I alphabetize them, and I shouldn't be doing that. They should be in the order I typed them in. Problems with Patch Tuesday, and your choices are, I had them, haven't been caught yet, getting sick of these patch problems, Linux forever, come to the Mac side, buy a Chromebook. Sheesh. So far, we've got 109 votes, and haven't been caught yet is on top. Getting sick of these patches is next. I had him is next, followed by Linux Forever, by a Chromebook. Only three people want us to come to the Mac side. And, of course, other. There's an other category, and if you selected other, you can leave a message in the forum. And the forum, you'll find, is from the main page of Soundbites. You can go scroll down on the right, and under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. In the second forum down is the poll discussion. And right now, the top item is 16 November 19, Problems with Patch Tuesday. And, of course, you can also give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, that's one thing. Thanks to your sending me you know, what we're going to be talking about. The Weiss machine, I was starting that up, and there was a notice. It wanted to do an update. And I just politely said, yeah, no, delay it later.
Well, the reality here is, folks, in general, if you are doing updates, you should not make them automatic.
Yeah.
Turn off automatic updates and just do them when you want to do them. Don't be the guys with the arrows in your backs. Make sure that you wait at least a few days.
Yeah, so you can get a more or less a consensus on how this one is, you know, coming out, and it's not, say, totally bricking machines or, you know, causing major disasters to where you got to reformat the hard drive and start all over.
And after you have a full backup of everything, just in case.
Mm-hmm. Well, that should be just standard. I mean, you don't definitely don't want to do any type of updates without first backing up your data.
Always. If you aren't doing backups, shame on you. And if you are doing backups, you're not doing them often enough or in enough places.
I had four data recoveries this week. One of them was from a house fire, three computers in a house fire.
Wow.
Everyone is safe, which is good.
Yeah.
They weren't home at the time, but their computers are dead. They didn't have backup drives, but if they did, it would have been next to the computer that died. And it's not necessarily the fire that will kill it. It's all the water that's used to put out the fire.
Yep. exactly.
But especially for a business, because one of them was their business computer.
Ouch.
You need to have an offsite backup or a fire safe backup. We sell the IO Safe brand of fire safe backups. I'm going to look up what the rating is. It's rated for so many minutes in direct fire and then so many days underwater.
Right.
And the hard drive will be intact. And so it's good to have an offsite backup too, but having that, a fire protected data safe for for your emergency backups is very important.
Yes. And it's also equally important to have an offsite backup. We've talked about this a couple of times. PCloud, I don't know what they're at right now, but PCloud at pcloud.com is used to be at least ridiculously inexpensive. Yes, still is ridiculously inexpensive. It's got a desktop app. So that it will automatically, but you set, you know, what folders you want, like my data or whatever.
Yeah, your documents folder.
Right.
And your pictures folder. Pictures are irreplaceable, you know. You can often retype documents, but you can't have that same grandkid again.
That's exactly right. And you can, and right now they're having a lifetime deal for half a gig. Excuse me. Half a terabyte, 500 gigs. 500 gigs, which should be enough for a lot of stuff.
Yep.
And it's automatic. The minute you put something in that documents folder or in that pictures folder, whichever one or ones you decide to back up, the minute you put something in that folder, it is automatically backed up to the cloud. It doesn't get any more convenient than that.
Yep.
It doesn't get any easier than that. So you should definitely have... There's no longer any excuse to not have a cloud backup.
No.
Because it's not expensive and it's not difficult.
Like Google is protecting your photos. That's usually the biggest thing for folks that are, you know, I mean, documents and that type of stuff. Yeah, it'd be a pain in the butt. You could recreate some documents. But photos. Photos are irreplaceable.
Yep.
Once they are gone, folks, they are gone. You know, there's not, oh, well, yeah, I could recreate it. No, it's never going to be that same moment or your treasured keepsake that you want to remember that person if they're gone, you know, a parent or whatever, a right. loved one. So those should be vital. And like I said, right now there is no reason because of Google Photo that even on your phone or on your computer that it should be going up to Google Photo automatically and then do other backups just in case. Because, you know, nothing's 100%. When you think it's not going to fail, that's just when it's going to.
Yep, that's exactly right. You need to be backed up immediately.
One of the problems to keep in mind is the distinction between a sync and a backup. A lot of the services like Google Drive and Dropbox will do a sync, which is great. You make a change on one computer, it's changed on the internet. But what if you want to go back to the document from yesterday? Well, that's gone because you changed it. So you want to make sure that your cloud backup has versioning or archiving or whatever they call it to keep your old versions of your document.
Right.
We've had so many people will accidentally delete a document or you do a select all and hit delete instead of deleting that one paragraph you wanted to, and that gets synced to the cloud. So now the empty file is synced to the cloud and your document has been deleted. So make sure you know the difference between a sync and a backup.
Well, and that's the other thing, too. By doing duplicates, you know, backups, you know, oh, if you did mess it up on this one, oh, I can go to this other backup that I had because I took the time to not back it up one place. I did it in twice. Yep. So like you just said, you know, if I accidentally copy a blank document over to the one that I thought I was saving and it's empty, oh, I got to start all over? No, I can go back to my other backup.
Right.
And grab it from there and then put it back and then make changes. That way you're just covering yourself 16 ways from Sunday. And there's nothing wrong with that. All it'll have to do is take and have to recreate that once.
Yeah.
You know, you go through this one time and I guarantee you will become a person that will be right behind us and saying, yep, back up, back up, back up. Because that's what it usually takes is one disaster for somebody to learn, unfortunately, when they lose something that was very important to them. Oh, shoot, I should have done that. Yes, you should have. And now maybe you will.
That's right.
But try to get ahead of the game and do it now before, you know, you do become a victim.
That's right. And it's very, it's important, but it's also, I don't know. Look, when you have backups, there's a peace of mind that you don't have when there are no backups. If you're at all like me, then honestly, you hear that tick, tick, tick in the background all the time. You know, are my data secure? Yep.
And a lot of people mean to get around to backing up. They say, oh, I don't have anything that important. I can just type it again until you realize that you're, you know, the pictures of the grandchildren. All your email contacts, people don't realize sometimes. I don't know their email address. I don't know their phone number. It's in my book. In my electronic book.
Right.
Because no one keeps paper books anymore.
Right.
And when you do write down your... that was another issue we had this morning. When you do write down your passwords in a paper book and then lock that book away, date it so you know what date that password was. So you know that's the current password and not that was the password 6 years ago and that's why it doesn't work now. We need a whole show on disaster recovery.
Yeah, we really do. It's important, and look, it's not an if, it's a when, and I think we all know that. The reality is that you need to back up today. If you are not backing up today, there is no guarantee your data will be there tomorrow. So definitely do that. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And by the way, Bob, I have changed your password, speaking of security. one of the things that I constantly harp on. We talked about file management and having versioning. You want to be able to automatically synchronize your files because then you don't have to think about it. What you really want to be able to do, some people want to be able to do, is sync across multiple devices. Also, security is an important consideration. For example, one of the reasons that I like pCloud, they automatically put copies of my files on five different servers, and all of them are encrypted. With my password. So you would have to know the ludicrously long password that I used.
No, it's not ludicrous.
No, it really isn't.
That's the way it should be.
Right.
But again, unfortunately, too many folks are too lazy and don't do that, when they could simply use one of the other programs that would make complicated passwords that they don't have to remember. All they have to do is go to that program and have it, you know, generate a password for that one, and they're covered all the way around.
Yeah, but that can cause one small problem. You have to pay attention. I use EnPass, and it gives me, and I've set it to be 56-character encryption.
Yeah, that's
not
bad.
With everything. It's not bad. It's okay.
Hey, it's better than 95% of the folks out there. I can guarantee you that.
But you run into the problem of when you're not paying attention and you let it set your Disney Plus password, and then you have to type it into the Roku.
Yep.
With that down, down, over, 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 down, over. That was painful.
Or it's surprising how many websites you'll find that won't accept more than, say, 15 characters as a password.
What is wrong with those sites?
They still have a COBOL back end with
exactly right.
8-character passwords.
That's exactly. I've seen those. 8-character. I was on one the other day that would not accept non-alphabetical characters, so no ampersands or
really
any of that stuff. Yeah, only numbers and letters. And I thought, do I need to chisel them in with a stone?
That is so antiquated.
7-bit ASCII. That's even older.
Yeah.
Could you use lowercase?
Yes.
Or did it have to be uppercase?
No, it was. I don't know if they converted to uppercase.
That could be, yeah.
But I could use letters and I could use numbers, but I could not use symbols.
Yeah, that's one thing I wish you could use. You know, hook up some type of keyboard.
Can't you? I haven't tried it, but
I don't know how.
I know on the Apple TV, it will pop up a keyboard on your phone or iPad for you to type with. Is that's handy.
I know I can put the app on my phone, you know, the Roku.
How about voice spelling? Does it support that?
No, but you can. If you have the Roku app, you can use a keypad on that, just the way he was saying.
Oh, okay. So I've got the app on my phone.
Right, and that does have a keyboard for it.
Which, that's one thing I got to say with modern technology, is really sweet, and that I had to go pick up another TV. Because one of ours died.
You should have waited for Black Friday deals.
Oh, this was already...
Some stores are
32-inch.
I found a 65-inch 4K HDR for $297.
Wow.
$297.
Wow.
It's an off-brand, but...
Hey.
It'll last a year.
You win.
Yeah.
Well, like I say, no,
buy
I got...
a new one every Black Friday. Yeah.
I got a 32-inch for ridiculously cheap. And what I love about it? It has the Roku built into it and everything else. One small remote.
Yeah.
Not sitting there playing with two remotes, one for the TV, one for the Roku. No, it's all one. And it even say, you can even put it on your phone if you want to do it that way. And then you can just talk into it and have it search for the channels.
Yep.
I thought, this is sweet. Get rid of some of the darn remotes. But that's the way it should be, though. A lot simpler.
A lot of TVs and cable boxes and things like that have tried putting out universal remotes. And it almost always works, but I find there's one button I need that it's not on the universal remote. So I still have three remotes. But I barely use the other two. My one universal works for almost everything.
For almost everything.
But switching HDMI inputs, the universal remote will let me bring up the menu to, and cycle through what the inputs are, but the enter button doesn't work to choose that input.
Oh!
So why bother showing me the inputs if you won't let me choose them?
Right. Yeah.
Because I'm not supposed to switch away from cable TV.
Well, that's one thing I like about my Raspberry Pis is I sit there and just hook up a wireless keyboard to it. And then it finds, oh, okay, and it sits there and you can type on a regular keyboard, or I've even got some smaller ones.
I've got this great keyboard for my Raspberry Pi that folds up.
Oh, those are nice.
And the whole thing is like this big.
You used to have one of those on Palm.
Yeah. Yeah, it folds up, and so I can tuck it out of the way, and then when I bring it out, I open it up, and it's a decent size.
You know what the next thing's going to be for that?
What?
Some of the voice commands.
Voice commands, yeah.
Siri does that for the Apple TV, where you can spell passwords letter by letter, but you can search word by word.
So oh,
you,
nice.
You can actually speak actual sentences to do searches from.
Right.
Show me John Wayne movies. And it does.
Well, you can do that on the Roku, too.
Yeah.
It's got a... Yep. Thing, but I eventually did download the Roku app.
By the way, Bob said thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bob. Enjoy. Bob's having fun, and you could too. Just join us in the forums. We're there, and we're having fun. But of course, we're also here on the air, and you can give us a call 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Going back to the news article you just read though about doing updates, that's one thing everybody should also change in their settings and change it to that you're asked.
Right.
Because, to sit there and, that's, something else I got to remember and all that. Yeah, in this case, you definitely want to, given Microsoft's track record.
Right.
Yeah, that's sometimes the downside of using a password manager is when you're not on your own computer or you're setting up a new computer and don't have the password manager in yet. And it asks you for your email password and you don't. I don't know how many times I've been told I don't have a password. Yes, yes, you do.
Yeah, you.
My
you
computer,
do.
Your computer remembers it for you from the very first time you put it in. We need to know what that is.
Yep.
Oh, I've never had to type one. It doesn't mean you don't have one.
That's a very classy looking little notification, isn't it?
Nice.
I'm on my Chromebook, and it notifies me that someplace called Soundbites is doing a live YouTube stream right now. And
really?
And the image is really sexy.
Can you get it up on the screen so we can watch it?
I did. It's up. It's up. And, I'm on a Chromebook, and I've got 9 tabs open right now, one of which is running YouTube. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, that must mean it's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mike from Pittsford, New York, on the line. What's up, Mike?
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Hey, listen, I've been listening to your backup advice, and I had a question. If you have a virtual machine, so if you have, say, Windows running inside of a Mac or Linux running inside of a Mac. Is there something special you have to do to back up that virtual machine when you back up your computer?
Yes and no. My favorite answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
It depends.
It depends is really my favorite
it depends.
Answer.
Okay.
So here's the deal. First, if you don't have... Okay. Virtual machines can, most of them, and you have to check your documentation for whatever you're using, most of them can create what's called a snapshot.
Okay.
Which is quite literally a snapshot of the entire state of that machine. It's essentially a clone of the hard drive.
All right.
So as long as you have one of those, you can always recreate the virtual environment. However, if, for example, you have data in one of those virtual machines that you want to make available to another machine in case your whole system goes down, then, yeah, you would want to have a backup. And, of course, even if you take snapshots, you want to put those backups somewhere safe as well, those snapshots.
Right.
Somewhere safe. So what I tend to do with my virtual machines is the ones that actually matter. I have a lot of virtual machines, most of which are just for testing. The ones
right.
that matter, I create snapshots and I back those snapshots, because those snapshots happen at the operating system level. So, for example, I'm on a Linux machine and one of my virtual machines is Windows. When I make a snapshot, that's available in my Linux machine, so I can back it up somewhere else.
I see. Okay.
So one of the other options is that inside that VM, you know, say you're running a Windows VM on a Mac, you run a Windows backup program and tell it to back up somewhere else too.
Right.
One of the caveats about running VMs on Macs is that if you have your Mac set up to do its own backup, that virtual machine file is, in essence, a single file on your Mac, and it may be true when you're doing it other VMs too. So when Time Machine runs every hour, say you have a 100 gig VM file, every hour that VM has changed, and so it backs up another 100 gigs. And so in a day, your terabyte hard drive is full.
Right.
Because it backs up 100 gigs an hour.
Yeah.
And so most of the VM programs for the Mac recommend you remove the VM file from the backup list and either use the snapshots built in or backup Windows separately to another volume inside Windows itself. Or just have a giant hard drive that can take a terabyte a day.
Right. Okay. Well, I was thinking of trying the pCloud that you guys were suggesting for something along those lines.
I have to say, I'm actually very impressed by pCloud. I didn't think I was going to be at first because it was so ridiculously cheap.
So something's got to be wrong.
Something's got to be wrong. So far, I can't tell you how happy I am. I can access it in Linux. I can access it on Windows. I can access it via the cloud. Via my browser, it's really quite amazing. I'm very impressed by it so far. I'm going to get a separate one for my wife, and I'm probably going to get her the high end one because she hasn't erased anything in her entire life.
Yeah. Never know. She might need it.
And it has a 30-day trash history, so when she ever does.
That's the other thing. It has versioning up to 30 days. If you want to pay for the super high-end one, then you can get, you know, higher versioning. But 30 days is pretty much enough for most anybody to say, oh, I screwed up. I need that file back and get it back. Almost nobody does more than 30 days. Bless you, my son. I think you can't.
I turned away from the mic.
It's hard.
And I turned my mic off.
It's hard to go. It's hard to go wrong with the.
And
with
it was
something,
still loud, wasn't it?
of what I perceive at least so far to be the quality of pCloud and the ease, certainly the ease of use.
Okay. All right. Well, great. Well, thanks for the tip.
Yep.
All right. So long.
Okay. Have fun.
They even have a family subscription. So you can share it with four other people.
Yeah, I thought about that too. That's also not expensive comparatively. I mean, you know, 2 terabytes for $500. That's and share it with the family. That's ridiculous.
One time payment.
Yeah, yeah. It's a one lifetime payment.
Or you can do $4 a month forever.
Sure, that's your choice. That's a good. And if you do the math, you know, how long are you going to live, is what they're thinking.
It's $8 a month for 2 terabytes.
Right.
It may, well, may not be how long you last. It's how long are they going to last.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
take the money and run.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm calling back with more phone questions. I guess specifically for Dave, I was at the Apple Cider user group meeting the other night. My wife and I decided yesterday to delve in to see whether or not we might purchase new iPhones. We looked at the 10R. But, you know, usually you get the usual fast talk when you go to one of these shops, and because they obviously want to sell you something. So I came back and I was looking at Apple's site, and it, you know, you can purchase one if you have a trade-in online, and it looks like it might be a little cheaper. But I'm looking at some things here, and one of them says you can get the phone, what does that say, unlocked?
Right.
It's with a SIM or something that's unlocked and SIM-free. First of all, what is that?
Basically, that means you can use it on any carrier. Most of the time when you buy a phone, it's locked to that one carrier until your carrier contract plan has expired. And by buying an unlocked phone, you can use it on any carrier you want. You can unplug the SIM, you know, pull out your T-Mobile SIM and put in a Sprint SIM,
it'll work,
and it will work. Yeah. So if you switch carriers a lot, or a bigger deal is if you travel out of the country a lot and need to use someone else's service in another country, that's often a big issue too.
Okay. Most of the time, we just go to Canada, and I never have a problem with it.
No, you likely wouldn't, depending on where you go in Canada, but generally speaking, you wouldn't.
There, we used to have a problem with one of the old carriers, PCS, was it? So in Canada, Bell and Rogers are the two biggest cell phone providers, and mm-hmm. so they have agreements with all the American providers so that when you go to Canada, your phone switches to Rogers, and then Rogers sends a bill to AT&T, and AT&T sends a bill to you.
Okay. So that's how that, because I often see that, and I say, what is this?
And yeah.
Realize that.
Right, and you may be paying roaming charges, but you won't have problems actually making a call.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's the other thing. If you do travel to other countries frequently, you can look at international calling plans. I was just looking this up for a customer the other day, AT&T. Hey, that sounds better, Rob. I can hear out of both my ears.
Yeah, me too. Wow.
AT&T has a $10 a day thing, so it's international roaming in most of the countries through Europe, that's a popular plan if you are traveling. But if you know you're going to be planning to travel more than a day or two, you probably want to look at an international calling plan. Or the other thing you can do is just buy a SIM at the airport, which is very common, and then you're using local service and local data in that country, but your phone number changes. So a lot of people don't like doing that because then people can't call them. But your messaging app, your text messages would change because your phone number changed. But a mm-hmm. messaging app like Apple Messages or Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp. WhatsApp probably would change because that's based on your phone number.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the messaging apps won't change because that's based on your email address, not your phone number.
Okay, so next question, it says choose your carrier. Now, we have ATP, and so when I choose ATT, it says, $19.95 a month, because obviously we were going to just pay for the phones outright, you know,
yep.
phones. So when you do that, or if you do it, it says that they will negotiate the cheapest price possible. So does that mean that when you get your phone, it's all set up and ready to go?
Generally, yes. And so by ordering it online, they want to get it all set up for your carrier, for your plan, so that when you get the phone and open the box, it will work. Because what happens is when you pull the SIM out of your current phone and put it into the new phone, they want it to be able to activate and just work right out of the box.
Well, would I need to send them our old phones?
Part of the
deal, because our phones are in excellent condition. No dents, dings, scratches, broken glass, nothing.
Yeah, so if you use that trade-in option, then, yeah, you would have to send the phone back into them.
Okay, so I just need my other phones backed up.
Right. Back up your phone before you get the new phone. The other thing to keep in mind is take a look at what Apple's going to give you for your trade-in, and then look at some of the other companies like Gazelle and Sell Your Mac. And sometimes you can get even that's weird. Sometimes you can get a better deal from another company to sell your phone outright, but it's often more convenient just to do everything through Apple.
Well, I don't know if I can mention price. I'll do it anyway. If they come looking for me, I wasn't here. they'll give me $120 for my 6S Plus, and because it's in good condition.
Yeah, that's not bad.
This is from Apple.
Yeah. May want to check with Gazelle anyway. They're probably one of the larger trade-ins.
Down right quick. Okay. And then last question, and I'll let someone else have you. When you mentioned Apple Care and stuff the other night, I was taking notes, but I wasn't taking them fast enough. They have Apple Care Plus. It's $7.99 a month, or $149. And then there's the Apple Care with theft and loss for $249 if you want to purchase it straight out.
Right.
And I guess that's for a year.
Right. And so what a lot of people do, the Find My iPhone feature that comes in, if you misplace your phone or lose your phone, leave it behind somewhere, you can use that Find My iPhone feature to track down where you left it and go get it. But if, for example, your phone is actually stolen, then you have to pay for a new phone. If you get that lost and stolen option, then you just pay the incident fee to get a replacement phone rather than needing to buy a whole brand new phone separately.
No, I can't. Not with the dates.
Yeah. Okay.
It's irritating to me.
Okay. I think that answered most of my questions. I was looking at this, and my wife and I were just thinking, you know, it might be easy to just purchase a phone, and then I'm not paying. Because the other thing you said is sometimes some of these carriers forget that you paid for your phone, and they're still charging you.
That's
and
the way it used to be in the old.
The other night, the first thing I started looking for was bills.
Yeah, that's the way it used to be when it was typical. You bought a 2-year contract from your phone carrier. At the end of the 2 years, you were supposed to get a new phone. If you didn't, you were still paying off the phone you've already paid off. And so most of the time, those 2-year contract plans have been replaced in the last 3 or 4 years. So now you're not paying a contract. You're paying a we had the different word, a lease payment, maybe.
Could be
something like that. Yeah. So it's technically something different. And when you pay off your phone, your bill will go down. So say half your bill is the phone and half the bill is the plan. When you pay off your phone, your bill goes down because you've paid off your phone.
Right. Well, fortunately, it did. My wife's a stickler for that, but I couldn't get home fast enough to start looking to see if they'd got me.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. That fills out the holes I had from trying to take notes the other night, and we'll make a decision. But you said Gazelle is one company, and the other one was what?
Sell Your Mac. I think they also do phones as well as Macs.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Yeah,
sure.
Go ahead.
So another thing to keep in mind is if you have an Apple card, you get 3% cash back on purchases at the Apple Store. Mm-hmm. And Apple does not charge interest on their payment plans. We were talking about this a couple soundbites ago, too.
Right.
So if you buy the phone and put it on your Apple card, you get a 3% cash back. And so you're in essence paying negative 3% finance charge.
Right.
So you don't have to pay any financing charge because Apple just divides your payments out. They don't actually charge you interest on the
on their equipment.
Right. You're basically taking a loan and agreeing to pay it back with that's the word I was looking for earlier, a loan, and paying it back. And so that's kind of a neat thing to do with that 3% on an Apple card.
I don't think I have an Apple card. I may have to get one.
Just to buy this phone. That'll work.
It'll work.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks,
Larry.
Guys. As usual, you tons of information.
Thanks, Larry.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, what about getting the SIM card out of an iPhone? Is that easy?
Yeah. Most of the phones come with a SIM ejector tool.
Oh.
Made out of liquid metal.
Liquid metal.
That's the brand name it is. It's silver sparkling.
All metal is liquid at the right temperature.
Yeah. some people just use a paperclip.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah. But yeah, the SIM is easily removed for you to switch to a new phone. Now, there have been different size SIMs over the years. We're currently on a nano SIM.
Right.
Which has been, what, at least 6 or 7 years. So for his iPhone 6, it still used the nano SIM. I think the 4 used the micro SIM.
Before we go back to the phones, we should acknowledge that Rob Linton is in the studio.
Messing about.
He's playing. I'm keeping hearing this echoing and echoing in my ear. And with the hearing aid.
Oh, it's got to make you crazy.
Oh, yeah. And he doesn't help.
Crazier.
And Rob, young puppy that he is, has no idea what old people go through. You'll get there, son.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Bob?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Okay, yeah, fine. I've got two questions. The first one, I've got two computers. They're older ones, but they work great. A laptop and a desktop, Dell, Windows 10. And I do all the updates, okay? And I just had another one just the other day. The problem is, in the last 2 or 3 months, ever since all these updates from Microsoft, my display screen is not shutting off. You know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I attribute it to Microsoft that they've done something in these updates. So both my laptop and my desktop, the display screen, like I set it to shut off sometimes 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Sometimes it'll work, but most of the time it doesn't. Do you have any comments?
Did you check the energy settings inside both the laptop and the desktop?
I've checked everything. The laptop is on power all the time. I've gone through power settings and the troubleshooter. I've done everything in the world.
No. Wait a minute. Let's back up there. You said power is on all the time.
That's correct.
Right. But the thing of it is, though, say like on a laptop, you... For it to blank out the screen like you want it to?
Yeah, it doesn't do it.
Because you've got it saying power on all the time. You've got to tell it, it can be on.
I mean, it's always plugged in. Okay?
No.
The screen is supposed to shut off after 5 minutes. It doesn't do it.
Yes, and Steve, Dave is trying to explain why that is. So hold on a second and let him talk.
Yeah, see, in the settings there, even though you've got it powered on,
yes,
you got to change that to after 10 minutes, turn off the screen.
In the settings.
Correct. I've done that.
In the settings, you've gone into power options and customized your power plan.
Yes.
And said to set, for example, the balance, and you've said turn off display after 10 minutes.
Whether it's plugged in or power.
Right, because there's battery. Two places you have to change it. One is in the plugged in plan and one is in the battery plan.
That's correct. I've done both on both the desktop and the laptop. And, display screen shut off after, say, 10 minutes. And then the last one, never.
Sometimes I've seen it like ignores the setting, so change it to a different number, restart, and then like change it to 10 minutes and then restart and put it back to 5 minutes.
Yeah, so both of them, whether it's plugged in or plugged in or running on battery, they should both read turn off display, say in 5 minutes.
Okay,
both of them.
The other thing you might want to try is to use the system file checker to check your systems. Also, some viruses will keep things running all the time.
Because they don't want the hard drive going to sleep.
Right.
Because then they can't be doing their thing.
So when was the last time you danced the security tango?
I've never done the security tango.
Then you should. You should go to the security tango, click on the Let's Dance menu option, select Windows, print out that page, and check off each step as you go to make sure you didn't miss anything. And do that right through from beginning to end. It takes a long time, depending on how fast your machine is and how big your hard drives are. But the theory is it'll get rid of most of the viruses that you have. So we see often that when you are infected with something, it will not let you. It ignores the power settings because it wants full power to do whatever it's doing in the background. So one of the symptoms is that your screensaver will not run.
You've not heard of any problems with this on all these window updates?
No, not that specific one. I have not. That's why I suggest that you try the Security Tango.
Okay. Last question is I came in late, and you were talking about some app that you can put on your computer to store your photos, videos, documents in the cloud. Which one were you recommending? You said it was very inexpensive.
Well, for photos specifically, Google Photos is free for pictures below 16 megapixels, and which most of us are.
But I want documents and photos right. and videos.
The one then, we were talking about, there are any number of them. The one that I happen to use, which we were talking about earlier in the show, is called P-Cloud. P as in personal, I guess. It's your personal cloud storage, and at pcloud.com.
pcloud.com. All right, I'll go check that out. And it does it automatically once you set it up.
Once you set it up correctly, I was surprised at how quickly it reacts and how fast stuff goes up and how soon stuff goes up. The speed depends on your connection, of course, but how soon things happen. I saved something over, and all of a sudden the little cloud thing was whirling around, and it was yeah. done.
So yeah, is it a monthly charge or a yearly charge?
It's a one-time charge. It's a one-time lifetime membership,
which is the least expensive way to do it. Or you can do a monthly or annual fee.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. We're not endorsing pCloud as such. We're not certainly. They're not a sponsor of us. But of the ones I have tried, cost ratio is great with that one. It's a very inexpensive and very good product.
All right. Before we go to the break, we had Kathy write in from Ontario, New York. I'm looking to replace an i6 with an i8 or XR. Verizon won't let me keep my old low cost plan. Yep. Can I get around it by buying Direct Unlocked? SIM free. Should I consider dropping Verizon in favor of Straight Talk or similar? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a common issue we've heard from the plans. It has nothing to do with the phone, except that when you buy a new phone, they can force you to buy a new plan. So a lot of carriers will cancel their old plans because they didn't make enough money, and they'll come out with newer plans where they can try to make more money. But it would... Excuse me. It would do you good to shop around and see what you can get, especially the smaller carriers like Consumer Cellular has done a lot of advertising. Straight Talk, even T-Mobile, we use in our office, and we cut our bill dramatically. But yeah, shop around to different plans, and that's a good way to lower your bills too.
All right. Well, we're done for the first hour. We're going to take a slightly longer bio break, and then we'll be back. With a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And we always, always remain truly grateful to you that we can indeed continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. 1 hour gone, 1 hour remaining. Take a quick break. We'll all be back for a whole nother hour of this nonsense. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And?
I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. And batting second, Pedro Gonzalez. It sounds like I'm.
Yeah.
I'm doing the.
We just got into a huge stadium.
Yeah, we just. Here we are. We're in a huge stadium. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Kathy from Brockport, New York. Hi, Kathy. What's up?
Well, I started out by saying I'm a member as of the membership drive.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I would like some advice on compatibility with word processing and other documents amongst a volunteer group that I belong to. I use LibreOffice on your recommendation.
Uh-huh.
And most of the time, I haven't had any problems, but the last few months, I've had people from the group send things to me that I can't open or make sense of, and other people are saying that when I've sent out minutes or agendas or something, you know, they can't read it. And I know I made a mistake a while back and sent out the LibreOffice document file version, and I should have sent them a Microsoft Word version of the document.
Right.
But I corrected that, I thought, but several of the people in the group are still saying they can't read their minutes.
All right. It part of that depends on how they're reading their minutes. If they are using an old version of Word, then DocX will not be a good option for them.
Okay.
You should save it as plain Doc.
Mm-hmm.
Or even RTS, which loses some formatting but is more even more universally acceptable. So in terms of LibreOffice, you have many, many choices, which is, of course, both good and bad. And try sending them out a test document that you save as just a .doc, mm-hmm. not as a .docx, and see if that is more usable for them.
And I'm really surprised that you can't read one of their files, because LibreOffice reads everything.
Somebody sent me a thing that was supposed to be a roster of our board and volunteer members of the group, and it was something that just was random characters that didn't make any sense.
Well, raster sounds like it was an image. Do you know what format it was supposed to be in?
No.
So you might have to use an imaging program, not a word processor.
Oh, okay.
Right, and if it's an image, if they took like a screenshot or sent you something that isn't a good PDF, for example, it was some sort of a corrupted PDF, that would cause that problem. The only other real problem that people have between LibreOffice and Microsoft Office is fonts. If you're on, if you're Windows to Windows, you generally don't have a problem. But if some people are on Macs or some people are on Linux, you may not have the same set of fonts, so LibreOffice will substitute the nearest font, mm-hmm. and sometimes the nearest font isn't that close.
No, but there is a second issue, you know. Yeah, you get hosed on paying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you use Microsoft Office, you have to pay for it. That's why a lot of people like LibreOffice.
Right. I think most of your problems should be solved by saving, particularly if they have older machines or they've got a copy of Word that they've moved over from, you know, 2002.
Or using even like WordPad or something.
Or they're using WordPad or something like that, then an RTS document.
RTF,
excuse me.
Rich text format.
Rich text format document would certainly be more universal, but you may lose some formatting and some images. A plain .doc, not a .docx, would probably be more universal all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I know some people are definitely using Microsoft Word, but I'm not, you know, don't know what everybody else uses at home. So.
Yeah, well, pretty much everything can read .doc.
Yeah, that's sort of the generic format.
Right, right, well, but not necessarily .docx.
That's the old, same issue. Is, you know, because she is working with the volunteer group, that they're using different versions.
Right.
And, you know, depending on people's budgets, you know, somebody might be still working with, say, Word 2008.
Or two.
Yeah. So
So or not, two, or yeah, or not, even Windows 97 version, you
sure.
know?
So not just Word, you need to know what version of Word.
And trying to keep up with every yeah. one right. of them.
But again, .doc should be fairly universally acceptable to everybody.
Okay.
All right.
So thank you very much for the advice. We're having a meeting this week. We'll see how we make out.
Yeah, send out a test message, something that, you know, is quick and dirty, and that'll give you a test.
Like there's a meeting this week.
Like there's a meeting this week, don't forget, and we think we've solved the doc problem.
Okay, great, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, there is just a plethora of formats Sounds for like documents. Word is pretty good at going backwards within its own bailiwick. So docx, any version of Word will read doc files.
Yeah, it was 2007 when they switched
right.
from doc to docx. So if someone is still running 2000, 2003, then they can only read doc files.
Right, right. So one of the things that LibreOffice does is it reads a multitude of formats because you never know what somebody else has. But even so, there are things it won't read. I opened this is years ago now, but I opened up Word perfect files without any trouble. I opened up a bunch of stuff. But yeah, having something that's entirely readable across the spectrum, you're pretty much stuck with .doc files.
That's why I still like Google Docs. I mean, everything, you know, doesn't matter who does it in what format, I can read it in.
Right.
And, you know, and or if I create it and send it out, doesn't matter what version of Windows they're using, they'll all still be able to do it.
Well, if you share it, then yes, yeah. they can see it through their browser.
Yep.
And it won't matter what version they're on.
Or even, you know, like you said, which they've offered for a long time, is being able to set it up as a PDF.
Right. Yeah. You can send it out as a PDF. You can send it out as a docx or as a doc and or as an RTF file. So you have a multitude of choices. The most usable one for Google Docs is to share the document itself and let mm-hmm. people view it online. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Regarding this lady's call that you just were answering, I think while I was waiting to get on, you hit what I was going to suggest. But if she's having trouble with multiple versions of software and the document does not have to be edited by anybody but her, she could just send it out as a PDF.
That's right.
Right. That's what we already said.
Right.
Well,
thanks.
Yeah, you hadn't said it when I called.
Right. 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 Right.
So.
Okay, thanks, Andy.
Yep.
Bye bye. Yeah. PDF is a portable document format. It's an Adobe. It's an Adobe thing, and of course, as we all know, Adobe has both good and bad issues. But PDFs are generally pretty useful. Almost everybody can read a PDF, and Andy's right. If you're not going to edit it in any way, if you don't expect the people at the other end to change it, sending it out as a PDF is not a bad idea.
And a lot of times, if you're sending meeting notes and minutes, they don't need to be changed.
You don't want them changed.
Yeah.
No.
Right? So
PDF would be far better to
right,
do.
Right, right, right. You really don't want them editing those things. You know, I always used to volunteer to take the minutes for a meeting, and everybody loved that. What they didn't know is the person who takes the minutes owns the meeting. I could decide, you know what, really, Dave should be doing that. And I'd write it in the minutes, Dave will do this. And afterwards, Dave might say, I don't remember agreeing to that, but it's in the minutes. So I guess it's on me.
Oh,
that's when you went to the bathroom.
What? Yeah.
When you went to the bathroom.
Yeah,
Never leave a board.
Or you were late showing up.
Meeting.
Yep.
So I can say that now because I'm retired. They can't get back at me anymore. But I used to do that all the time. The person who takes the minutes owns the meeting. May not run the meeting, but owns the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, and if you send it all out as a PDF, then you absolutely have nobody who can change it when you're done. All right. I'm going to read and you can give us a call, by the way. We have nobody on the line? 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And I will read the news while you call in. That's our deal. Apple's new 16-inch MacBook Pro unveiled Wednesday replaces the 15-inch model with revamped hardware that delivers up to 80% better performance and a new, well, old, Magic Keyboard. The company also confirmed that it plans to ship the long-expected Mac Pro in December. And December's in quotes. The new MacBook Pro brings a 16-inch Retina display, the latest 8-core processors, up to 64 gig of memory, up to 8 gig of VRAM, and a new advanced thermal design.
8 terabytes of storage.
Up to 8 terabytes of storage, right. Apple, not that most of us need 8 terabytes of storage. That won't even fit in P-Cloud. Apple has improved the keyboard. Yay! The new Magic Keyboard boasts a redesigned scissor mechanism and 1 millimeter travel for a more satisfying key feel. The keyboard also provides a physical escape key and arrow key. Are you telling me they did not have a physical escape key or arrow keys?
It's an electronic key. It's
holy jeez and crackers. Key. Okay. The new keyboard should give users a stable key feel, the company said. It features an Apple-designed rubber dome that stores more potential energy for a responsive key press. Critics had not liked the lack of responsiveness of the original butterfly design, that mushy, horrible, horrible design. Breakdowns indicate that the new keyboard is basically the old keyboard that everybody wanted back anyway. The Mac also features a 6-speaker sound system and promises better battery life. The Touch Bar and Touch ID is part of the package, as is the T2 security chip. The MacBook Pro doubles the SSD storage to 512 gig and 1 terabyte on standard configurations and can be configured with 8 terabytes of SSD storage, the largest SSD ever in a notebook. This Mac includes the largest ever Mac notebook battery, 100 watt hours, which should deliver an additional hour of battery life. Graphic performance is provided by the 7-nanometer AMD Radeon Pro 5000M, equipped with GDDR6 video memory with an 8 gigabyte VRAM option. Apple said, basically that just means it gets up to 80% faster performance than the previous high-end Mac, which is great for gamers and video editors and game developers, and really doesn't matter if what you do is play on the web and do email. Of course, a bigger display, greater storage and memory capacity means these machines pose certain power demands, and that is what led Apple to improve thermal design in these systems with a bigger fan and bigger vents. With typical Apple modesty, Apple calls this the most advanced thermal architecture ever in a Mac notebook. It has the best thermal protection. Believe me, trust me, it's the best. These new Macs introduce a completely redesigned 6-speaker high-fidelity sound system the company says provides the most advanced audio experience ever in a notebook. The system uses Apple-patented force-canceling woofers that employ dual opposed speaker drivers to reduce unwanted vibrations that distort sound, so music sounds better and bass gets deeper. The microphone has also been improved. Apple says this now rivals the quality you get from professional-grade digital mics, so podcasters will likely take interest in these machines. Prices start at $2,400. Are you hot for the new MacBook Pro? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
We had somebody text us and it says, whenever I install LibreOffice, the very first thing I do is go into the settings and set the default save option to .doc and in uncheck it for to warn me about, I think he meant warn me about not saving in LibreOffice format.
Yeah. Normally, of course, every Office suite has its own format set. What LibreOffice normally uses is the open document format. But you can set it to default to .doc or .docx or whatever you want, and have it not warn you, or as many of us think, nag you when it is saving in those formats. Because normally you'll say, are you sure you want to save this in the lousy old Microsoft format?
Yeah.
I believe they don't actually use the word lousy. But the basic idea is that you with LibreOffice, it's your machine, you get to pick. And they make it fairly easy to do that. So in terms of what Kathy's talking doing, she may want to default to .doc. Mm-hmm. For not, you know, if 90% of what you do is send stuff to other people and you got to save it in .doc anyway, go into the settings and
less
and
headaches
set the
for
default,
her.
Right, set the default to .doc, not .docx. Well, once she figures out that that's the problem,
yeah,
set it to .doc, and from then on, all her documents should go without having to think about it.
Yeah, I was going to say that would probably be the most convenient way for her to do it, and less frustrating. Based upon no matter what version of Word those folks are, even if some folks are running, say, the current version of Word, it's still going to be able to read a DOC file, right, which is something Microsoft has always had going for it, is they're always backwards compatible.
Right.
You know,
right.
Although the older versions can't do DOCX, the older versions, you know, the newer version still can read the DOC, so right, saving it by going into LibreOffice, like you said, and changing it to the DOC, that would probably relieve 99% of her headaches.
Right. Now, there are some high-end features that are not available in .doc, but they really are features that most people do not use ever. So yeah, it is on balance, not a bad option.
Yeah.
And again, now, if there really is something... you know, every once in a while you get a warning that says this feature may not save correctly or whatever it says. For those, then you can save it as an open document format for your own use, and you'll get all the features, but you'll still be saving stuff for other people as well.
And probably using like an Arial or a Times Roman standard font.
And you want to, yeah, right. You want to use standard.
Just
fonts.
Do that, and then you know you're good all the way around. You've got your bases covered. You got a document that people can open, and the text is all going to be convert so that they can read it.
Right. For me, I generally use Georgia when I'm writing in LibreOffice. Georgia. But because I just it, to my eye, it looks more pleasing than Times Roman or Arial. But Georgia is a standard font, and pretty much everybody can read it. But you're right. When I'm sending something out, it's Times Roman or Arial, and that's yeah, and that that's way, it.
Yeah. Whereas I like Old Century School Book, or they call it School Book.
Right.
Just the style of that.
I used to use that all the time myself, yeah.
Just the boldness of that, because...
I like Comic Sans.
You would.
Why does that not surprise me? That does not surprise me one bit.
If you're writing a comic book, Comic Sans is absolutely the font you want to use. If you're not writing a comic book, leave it alone. One of the problems is, you know, other people.
Mm-hmm.
if you're only doing stuff for yourself, it doesn't matter. Use whatever format you want, use whatever fonts you want, do whatever you want, because it's all there for you. But if you're doing it for other people, if you're sharing it with other people, then you have to take into consideration the fact that they may not have the fonts you have, they may not have the program you may have, et cetera, et cetera.
Again, that's where it's easy. Just put it up on Google Docs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and share it. And let's
say also iWork in the cloud. What are they? Is it just iWork in the cloud?
Or yeah.
Whatever they call it. And
they just keynote numbers. They've kind of fallen out of using the iWork suite name.
Right. Oh, what do they call it now?
The Pages, Keynote, and Numbers are the three individual programs.
Oh, they just said, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm old and I don't care. but
I remember AppleWorks in my day.
Yeah. That's all right. I remember Scribble and Mints. Anybody out there remember Scribble and Mints? Okay. Anyway, the idea here is that if you're using Office 365 online or Keynote and the other two online, and or you're using Google Docs or Zoho Office or any one of the hundreds of other suites that are out there.
WordPerfect.
Right. Or any of the I'm talking about the ones that are online specifically right now. Then you can do a lot of sharing directly. So, for example, in Google Docs, one of the things I've done is you've seen the list we have of callers. I keep a list of all the callers, and that's shared with Steve. So he can go in there at any time and see that. And he pulls that out. And in fact, he's online now, and I see that he is. Don't change anything. I know you. Doggone it!
change all your settings and font.
Yeah. That's a little scary.
He's going to go in there and change his font for you.
Yeah, right. Well, you can. But yeah, the thing is, I can see exactly what he's doing as he's doing it, and he's going to go change a font now. Watch him. I hate you. You can't begin to imagine. But I just use the default font anyway, mostly in Google Docs, because I'm not a fan of sans serif fonts.
Yeah.
But I get that everybody else is, and of course you're all wrong, but it's okay. You get to be wrong. It's not a problem.
It's serif fonts for text and sans serif for headlines.
Yes. Yes, that is exactly correct. Yes.
And yes, Oxford commas are good.
And Oxford commas are good. All right, now I like you again. All right. You can stay.
Glad we got that settled after 30 years.
Yeah.
What's my favorite one? Let's eat grandma. Let's eat, comma, grandma.
Grandma, right.
The Oxford comma is necessary.
Well, you know, the Oxford comma is just before an and.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bob, Carol, Ted, comma, and Alice.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Oxford comma. If you leave that out, it changes the actual meaning of the phrase. And I'm
I actually
sorry.
Read about a lawsuit someone won because it was missing an Oxford comma.
Yep.
It was like you had to do this thing. If you did this, or this. And they meant to say this, comma, or this.
Right. So one of three.
Right. And so the company did this because it said or this. Well, we did that one and we didn't do the first two. But but because that was how it was legally worded, they won.
Oh.
Right. Right.
The intent was that they were supposed to do all three, but there was a comma missing.
There was a comma missing. So, yeah.
No, it's eight. When you're right, you're what?
When you're right, you're right. And so you want to be very careful about that stuff. You want to be very, I get it. It's very pedantic. And there are reasons that pedantic is good sometimes. But we have these rules for a reason. And those of us who still speak English, the way it was meant to be, not the King's English, but America's English. Well, it used to be the King's English before the great vowel shift, I guess.
All right, we got one before we're going to take a break here. We got kudos. Probably wouldn't have thought, probably, I think they meant, probably wouldn't have thought of that incompatibility depending on the security needs. Share it as a Google Docs, then just as a web browser is needed. Wonder if she uploaded to Docs, if she would be able to see whatever is already received.
Well, when you upload things to Docs, you have two choices. One is to upload as they are, and the other is to translate them automatically into Google's format. You can set that in the settings of Google Docs. One of the reasons that we suggest people do that is, of course, because Google Docs itself, if you save something in the Google Doc format, it doesn't take any of your storage space. But we can talk about that when we come back or not. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
And we can officially say it's freezing.
Yeah. It's freezing. It was colder than that earlier, and it's warming up to 32.
Yeah, I think. Well, I think the rest of the week it's supposed to get up into the 40s.
Yeah, at some point.
The low 40s. Don't worry.
We're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. Yeah, it's supposed to get, what's it say here? Yeah, it's supposed to get up to 45 on Thursday. Holy moly.
If the wind would just die down enough, I can go flying.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I've seen guys that have thermal gloves and the whole kit worked out. And I've got skis for one of my planes. Just got a wind has to die down enough.
Yeah, tell me about it. Right now, I've been watching in the back. My neighbor has all these maple trees.
Yeah,
I still think there's something wrong with them. Somebody else can tell me. But when maple tree leaves fall,
yeah,
there shouldn't be black spots on them, should there?
No,
I didn't think so. I thought that was some type of disease or something.
It's maple rot or whatever they call it. I forget.
Well, I know. I tried to point out to them that you look up and you see some of the branches, and they're literally starting, the bark is starting to peel back on them.
That's bad.
It's a fungus infection.
I'm thinking, that's not very good, and you should probably address it because...
On the other hand, our maple tree didn't have any of that, and that last big wind we had took it right down.
Well, what I'm concerned for him is that they're all leaning towards his roof.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm worried about it is because he has a slate roof. Not easy to fix.
That's a problem. We were very lucky, thank God. The tree fell directly between our house and the next door neighbor, right in their driveway.
Did anybody hear it?
Oh, all of us heard it. Believe me, all of us heard it. I was sitting with my headphones on listening to something. I heard it. Yeah. And I'm deaf.
Yep.
It did break one of his porch windows, back porch windows. But other than that, it touched nothing. Poor guy couldn't go to work in the morning because we had to haul it all out. But it was still it's still pretty good that it only broke that one little window. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brent from Fairport, New York. Hi, Brent. What's up?
Hi. Good. Thanks. Thanks to you guys for taking out the better part of your day for this program every week, too.
Thank you.
You know, I can't always listen, but I can always get on and listen to the recordings later, so that's great.
Right.
Now, I've been looking at chrome boxes, and when I'm doing a search, I see also things that look like chrome boxes, but they're really, I call mini PCs loaded with Windows 10.
Yep.
And, but they're, it seems to me they're cheaper. And I was wondering, I think the answer is going to be no, if I could get one of those and put the Chrome operating system on it.
Ish, yes. You can put, there's a company called Neverware.
Yeah.
And they have a program that will, is essentially Chrome OS. It's called Cloud Ready.
Okay.
And Chrome OS is Google's version of Chromium OS, which is an open source operating system.
Okay.
And Cloud Ready is Neverware's version of Chromium.
Yeah, I've read about that. Okay.
Yeah. So you can, in fact, put that on danged near anything. Now, one of the things that you want to be aware of is that not every version not every hardware configuration works terrifically well with Cloud Ready, but on their free download page, it is free, by the way, it is a completely free operating system.
All right.
On their download page, there is a hardware compatibility guide. So you can check not only various certified models. And the certified models means they guarantee it'll work. Otherwise, it may or may not work.
All right.
One of the nice things you can do is they have a USB installer that creates a live USB disk.
Ah.
A stick, rather. USB stick. A thumb drive.
a Chrome recovery disk or something like that.
Essentially, so what you do is you start the thing with this in the drive and make sure that it'll boot from it, and then you boot that, and now you're running Cloud Ready without having to go to install it. And so at that point, if it doesn't work, you have two choices. You can continue using it as a Windows 10 machine, a severely underpowered Windows 10 machine.
Yeah.
Or you can try a couple of versions of Linux, something like Puppy Linux or Damn Small Linux.
Okay.
Or something along those lines. It's certainly they're not bad products to begin with. They will not be tremendous. I'm sure you figured this out already. They will not be tremendously fast.
Yeah.
They will not be very powerful.
And that's often how they make them cheap, is by putting in insufficient RAM and insufficient storage.
Right.
Yeah. Some of them run Windows 10S or something like that.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Windows 10S is the... we all know what the S stands for. But yeah, I wouldn't run that version on anything, and I would not necessarily personally purchase a device that ran Windows 10S products.
Okay, thanks. You got time for another question?
Quickly, yep.
Okay, printing with Chrome with a Chromebook. I haven't done that, and a couple of days ago I was in a store and I picked up a little printer. I think I paid too much. I paid $24 for it.
Doggone it!
And some people say they get it for $20, but it's an HP. It's kind of an amazing thing. I can do printing from the USB. I can connect to direct Wi-Fi. I don't like that because that takes me off the router. But to image, I use the a Chrome extension, HP Print.
Yeah.
And so I found out to do imaging, scanning, I have to use a HP Smart app.
Right.
And so I put that in, and then I've got to connect that printer to the router. And then I find out that somewhere HP up in the cloud, they do their updates, and they also print me off a few pages to tell me what to do and offer me more ink. I was wondering if there's a body of knowledge around that tells what the best printers and the best software are to print from a Chromebook or a Chrome box. I don't need detailed answers now, but is there a body of knowledge out there that says, hey, here's the best kind of best printer and the best software? The best apps.
It's kind of rough because best can mean too many different things. Do you want low cost? Do you want high speed? Do you want color? Do you want black and white?
$24 for the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the best lowest cost printer.
More than cheap plastic in it.
Well, but one thing you should be able to print directly to this, as far as scanning goes, the app should work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the app works.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It works, and it's pretty good. But I don't like the idea of having that printer connected to my router all the time.
Well, that's something you can't help if you're going to do that kind of printing.
Yeah, then you have to plug in the USB cord.
One of the things that you should be able to do. No, it depends on your router, I guess. No, never mind. That's not going to work. But in general. Locking down your printer to your personal network should keep others from being able to connect to it. So one of the things HP sometimes does is they set up their own print server.
Yeah, is that called the web embedded server or something like that?
Yes. You should be able to turn that off and only accept print jobs, and that will let you only accept print jobs over your personal network.
Okay.
So somebody would have to be on your network in order to print, even if that printer is 24/7 on your network.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll look into that. I didn't know whether there were other apps that might be better, but I'll do some research.
Yeah, all the apps are going to assume that you're on the network.
Okay. All right, I got you.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Right, right.
Yeah, printing, back in the day, when Chromebooks first came out, printing was not possible. And then it was only possible when you had cloud printing, which came through Google's cloud. But now you can pretty much directly connect to dang near any printer. In fact, when I set up my Chromebook, I went into printer and it just found my printer and said, you want to use this one? And I said, yes, and we were done.
I kind of wish companies would take off that Wi-Fi direct printing, The intent was that someone is a guest in your house and they want to print, so they can log into the Wi-Fi direct printing without getting on your whole network.
Right.
Well, one, you probably gave the guest in your house your regular wireless password.
Yeah.
And two, why the heck do they want to print at your house?
Yeah, right.
And three, it's a security violation issue, right, that someone pulled in front of your house could then start printing stuff out of your printer.
That's exactly
and
right.
And it has to
then
be,
tap on your door. Can I have the document I just printed?
Right.
And it has to cost a little more to include that second radio to have that Wi-Fi Direct built in.
Right. So, okay, whatever. The fact is you should turn it off. I understand why they do it. It's easier for many people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not secure.
So they probably do it so they can tell people, switch to your Wi-Fi Direct and then you can print. Well, now you've disconnected from the internet and you can't get on the internet to get to the email you were trying to print.
You're right, exactly.
And around and around you go.
But it gets you off the phone because your printer works.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Just a quick thing on the DocCX thing.
Right.
When they came out with the DLCX, you could not print on the DLC. Everybody screamed. So they came out with a compatibility pack.
Right.
And you can still, I don't know if they're still putting it out because they want you to buy the newer versions, but you could download the compatibility pack, hard words, to use to read DocX files on a doc.
Right. But it's easier to just save them as docs.
Right, yes, it's much easier. But if someone sends you a DLCX, if you have the compatibility pack...
Yeah, you can convert it.
Right. Thanks.
You can read them on your other machine.
Good idea. Thanks, Steve.
Yep.
A lot of early printers used Windows as the printer hardware computer.
Right.
And then Windows would just send the already rasterized job to the printer itself. Until companies realized then that you had to have Windows to print, so no one with Mac or Linux or Chrome or Android or iPhone. And so now most of the printers have their own little brain in them and can print from any device and on any OS.
Right. Windows-only printers were a great idea for Microsoft, not so much for anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We have another news item. Facebook has faced a barrage of concern over an apparent bug that resulted in the social media giant's iPhone app exposing the camera as users scroll through their feed. A tweet over the weekend blew up after a fellow named Joshua Maddox tweeted a screen recording of the Facebook app on his iPhone. He noticed that the camera would appear behind the Facebook app as he scrolled through his social media feed. Several users had already spotted the bug earlier this month. One person called it a little worrying. Some immediately assumed the worst, as you might expect, given the long history of security vulnerabilities, data breaches, and inadvertent exposures at Facebook over the next year, not to mention that nobody trusts Zuckerberg. Just last week, the company confirmed that some developers had improperly retained access to some Facebook user data for more than a year. The bug appeared to affect only iPhone users running the latest iOS 13 software, and those who have already granted the app access to the camera and microphone. It's believed that the bug relates to the story view in the app, which opens the camera for users to take photos. One workaround is to simply revoke camera and microphone access to the Facebook app in their iOS settings. Facebook Vice President of Integrity, Guy Rosen, tweeted that it sounds like a bug and that the company was investigating. A bit later that same day, a spokesrobot confirmed that the issue was, in fact, a bug. We recently discovered that version 2.4.4 of the Facebook iOS app would incorrectly launch in landscape mode, said the spokesrobot. In fixing that issue last week in version 2.4.6, launched on November 8th, we inadvertently introduced a bug that caused the app to partially navigate to the camera screen adjacent to newsfeed when users tapped on photos. We have seen no evidence of photos or videos being uploaded due to this bug. I guess it does say something when Facebook trust has eroded so badly that it will not get the benefit of the doubt when people see such a bug. Do you believe it was an innocent bug? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0400. 15.
The bug was that somebody caught it.
Yeah.
And actually, iOS 13 has now gone to asking you every now and then, do you still want this app to have access to your location,
That's
camera,
nice.
Microphone, photo?
That's
it used
nice.
To be you said once yes, and then
you were done.
You were done, yeah. Now it asks you every now and then again.
I'm sure there are people who are annoyed by that. They're wrong. You don't want to be annoyed. You want to be happy about that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Nick from Penfield, New York. Clearly an intelligent man. Hi, Nick. What's up?
Not much, except that I texted in a question last weekend about the Linux installation on a Mac, 2009 Mac desktop. I still can't get the installation to go to a point where I could actually see a normal screen. It divides into four, and on the big screen, I have four tiny Ubuntu or whatever I'm trying to put in, screens that come up, and I can't read anything on it.
Are the screens identical?
Identical, yes.
So it thinks you have four screens and is sending the image to each of them.
Yeah, I don't know what's in a 2009 iMac, but what it sounds like is one of two things. Either it's an incorrect driver, which is unlikely but not impossible, or I don't know if you can set an iMac to do that internally.
It's a feature of macOS to have multiple screens, but by installing Linux, he doesn't have that option. Well, not from the Mac, but maybe Linux is set. For what's the multiple screen option?
Multiple desktops.
Yeah.
But they don't all appear as one desktop. If you select one of those desktops, can you double click on it and make it full screen?
No. Anything that I'm able to do on any one of those four is replicated on all four of them. So if I try to click on something just to see if I could have a reaction to it. If it opens up a menu, it opens up on all four identical.
Now, did you actually install it, or is this just when you boot the thing and it comes up that very first time?
That very first time. I tried to use the USB to do a live.
Right.
And it does that. I even went so far as to say, let me even try to install it. And even when I say install, the first thing that comes up after it tries to boot up is that four screens, and I'm lost. I can't even read anything on there to be able to answer questions. And most of the time, I think 99% of the time, it just goes into a GUI,
right,
a GUI interface, and not a...
Okay, hold on. We've only got a minute left, and I want to get to some questions here. What version of Linux is this?
The 18.04 of Ubuntu.
Okay. I've seen this with Arch, and I've never seen it with Ubuntu. I don't know that we have enough.
Oh, the Makerspace is today, isn't it?
Yeah. That was what I was about to suggest. The Makerspace is happening right now. It's on till 4 o'clock at 1115 Main Street, I think it is, or something. But at any rate, I have it in my, I'm sorry, I'm doing two things at once. There is a Makerspace today. The Linux Workshop is on, and, if it's a laptop,
Interlock.
You can bring Interlock. That's it. You can bring your laptop down, and, they will be more than happy to help you do that. The address is 1115 East Main Street, door number 7, suite 200. And I'm afraid that music tells me we're done for another week.
You.
I'm sorry, but they should be able to see it. And I think that's a problem that needs to be seen to be helped. And it's an iMac, and that's a desktop machine. Anyway, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Rob Linton for coming in here and screwing us up. And then that's it. and then fixing it. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?